We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Welcome back to Gwynn and Chris. Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Ello. Our next guest joins us via the Spectrum Business Hotline here on 97.3 The Fan. You guys hear me say this quite often because I feel like I had a lot of mentors out there. This being one of my favorites. I got an opportunity to play with this gentleman in 2014 in Philadelphia. He's a Philadelphia Philly legend. Now he's on TBS killing the game on the broadcasting side along with Pedro Martinez and Gary Sheffield. Joining us now is Jimmy Rollins. Jimmy, how are you today, brother?
I'm good, my man. Just enjoying my time off in between these dates. Before I have to go back to work and start clowning.
Before we even get into this interview, I have to say the suit you had on last night was magnifico, man.
Well, I appreciate it. You know, I tried to go outside the box. My whole vision this year, I was thinking, wear something that you would see somebody else in and say that is clean, but I probably wouldn't wear it myself. So I went outside my comfort zone and had to step it up. You know, Sheffield be on there looking clean.
He does.
So I had to finally get out of my season suits and get into my more stylish side.
Whatever you did,
well,
worked.
Job well done.
Yeah, because Tony was like, during the show, was taking pictures of the television. I've never seen anyone do that before. Jimmy Rollins. It's a real pleasure to have you on the show. I'll tell you one thing. You look pretty good in your Philadelphia Phillies uniform all those years, too. And, I'm curious, the difference for you being around playoff time as a guy who was in the playoffs all the time and now doing it from the other side and being on the other side of the camera, is it a little difficult for you to watch playoff baseball, or have you kind of come to terms with it all?
No, I'm fine. You know what? In 2016, right when I got released, we went out to Toronto. And, you know, when I got released, I didn't miss baseball. I didn't miss the grind of the 162 at all. I've been doing it for a while, and I just accepted, you know, that might be the last time in a professional or in a big league uniform. And then we went up to Toronto and then to Cleveland, and I looked at Pedro and I looked at Gary, and I was like, this is the only thing I missed this time of the year, October.
Yeah.
The lights are bright, and you're actually playing for something. It isn't just to go play another game tomorrow that – and sometimes feels meaningless. Every single game counts, and you only have five in the first round. And at that point, it was in the LCS. So you have seven games to determine whether you go on or go home.
Jimmy Ross joins us here, TBS analyst, during the postseason, baseball postseason. Jimmy, you guys, we just wrapped up this Red Sox-Yankees series. Red Sox take it in four. Where are you at as far as this next matchup? Houston versus Boston. These are the two of the best teams in all of baseball. What's your breakdown of this matchup?
That's going to be one heck of a series. You have the Houston Astros, who are anti-2018. And what I mean by that, they don't sit there and rely on their bullpen to pitch the last five innings of a game.
Right.
They have starters that go deep and that can dominate a game. And when they do give it to their bullpen, they're giving it to guys that can probably be number ones and twos on certain teams. So there's no breakdown in that pitching staff. And on the other side, you have the Boston Red Sox, who won 108 games many different ways. Their bullpen, especially coming down the stretch, has been shaky. So they literally have to rely on their starters to go as deep as they can so they can hand it off to Joe Kelly or Barnes to hand it to Kimbrel, although he was, you know, shaky last night.
Very.
You can still count on him to get the job done, I think. So that's how I feel about it as far as the staffs go. Offensively, I think they are a very, very similar team. Guys that can hit the ball out the yard all throughout the lineup. They can move runners. They will play National League style ball in American League. And they have managers who, well, actually a manager in A.J. Hinch, who's been there, been a World Series champion, Alex Cora, who was sitting there watching this man manage that team, have his first year in Boston lead the franchise to the most wins in their history, they are going to see who has the better wits. Because I think it's a really an even match minus the bullpen, but they can score just alike. They can move runners just alike. They both play good defense. Edge definitely to Houston as far as defensively, but it's going to be interesting. And I said it the other night. I'm not sure which way to go. I want to say Houston just because they have better pitching, in my opinion. But Boston won 108 games, and they played in a tough NL East division. So it wasn't like they just walked through bad teams. They had to win, and they did that in a way that is historic in that franchise.
Jimmy Rollins is with us, a great ball player, MVP of the National League 2007. 2008, won his World Series with the Philadelphia Phillies. Playoff baseball, you kind of touched on it, Jimmy. It's a little different now, 10 years later, than the way it was when guys were sending Cliff Lee and Curt Schilling and Roy Halladay and guys like that to the mound. Teams are sending guys to the mound now to pitch two innings and then getting out of the way for a bullpen. Do you like the direction baseball's going, or do you wish it would go back to the way it was?
No, I would definitely like it to go back to the way it was. It's in a state of analytics, and for those teams that get the mix right and use analytics as a tool but still make in-game decisions that are baseball decisions and that aren't number decisions, I think they find a way to win. They get the most out of their players. Their players can buy into that system. But when you are basically mix-matching guys, and, you know, bring them in, well, this is a high-leverage situation. Okay, that may be true. It's a high-leverage situation in the fifth inning. But what if this situation comes around later in the game and everybody knows those last six outs are tough? The last three are the toughest, but that eighth inning, you got to have a guy in there who can handle that eighth inning and can hand the ball off to the ninth. But if you use that guy in the fifth or sixth because it was a high-leverage situation according to the numbers, you are basically playing flip a coin with who's going to finish this game for you. And then as far as position players, that utility guy, that the super utility guy that was valuable for a number of years, that's basically anybody now. Unless you're a star, high-paid player, you're just a super utility guy who's going to play 3 to 4 days a week, and they're actually telling you ahead of time, you know, we don't like this matchup here, so you're going to get this game off. When I went to the ballpark, when Ant went to the ballpark, when Tony went to the ballpark, you went there every day saying, I'm going to play unless the manager cards into his office. And it's like, excuse me, I'm not playing today. and he would sit there and give you an explanation. I just think you need some time. You know, we got a long stretch coming on. I'm looking at the days I can give you off. And then you still just kind of scratch your head. And you're walking back to your locker looking like, I just let the team down because the manager decided to give me a day off. And I'm not saying that players don't feel that way, but the managers and the upper management, they don't look at it that way. They say, we're going to keep you fresh. You know, we can get more value out of these two players as opposed to letting one guy go out there and be the best he can be. So you're kind of getting average performance from two players instead of great performance from potentially one player.
Yeah, and not only that, Jimmy, it doesn't allow for guys to improve later on in their career, because once you hit a certain age, you're pretty much already pigeonholed into being that type of player where you're platooning and coming off the bench or getting starts every once in a while.
Mm-hmm. But that's this new game. Yeah. Some players are, like they said, they bloom later. You could look at a couple of examples. I would take like a Ben Zobrist, who was always, you know, the right man in the right place. And then he found himself into a couple championships and was the man. It worked out for him. He had a chance just to kind of feel his way in, play this position, play that position. Finally got his chance. As you said, now if you're a utility guy, you're going to be forever treated that way.
Yeah.
And there's no, like I said, that super utility guy, he's kind of gone because everybody's kind of that position unless you got a big contract and you're basically the face of the franchise. Everybody's just kind of like, oh, we're going to put you in rotation and, you know, you're going to play some games in left, maybe a couple games at first, and we'll just see how we can mix and match this lineup. And I just don't like it, honestly.
Yeah. Joining us is Jimmy Rollins, courtesy of the Spectrum Business Hotline here on 97.3 The Fan. Jimmy, I'm looking at these teams, especially in American League, before we switch over to the National. I look at this team, both of these teams, and the team that reminds me most of your 2008 championship team are the Boston Red Sox. They kind of play the game very similar Very aggressive runners on the bases. They got guys at the top that can do a little bit of everything. They can hit for power. They can run. They can they do it all. Do you see this Boston team being similar to, at least offensively, to that 2008 Philly team?
Yeah, I can see a lot of that, and that's why when I was speaking on them earlier, they are saying they play more of a National League style baseball game. They don't sit back and rely on a 3-1 home run, although they have plenty of that in their lineup from Mookie to JD on through. Xander, same way. They have guys that will bop, but they have guys that will put together some at bats, make the pitcher work, take the hits when they're given, and going about their business in a way that is pleasing to your eye.
Yes.
That's pleasing to watch. You're excited to go see them play because you don't know how they're going to win a day. I don't even think they know how they're going to win a day, but when they're in that moment, they do it the right way. And their pitching staff, I mean, we had a good left-hand Cole Hamels. We had Jamie Moyer. We had Joe Blanton. And then we had Mattson and Lidge in the end. We had a lefty in J.C. Romero. So we had guys out the bullpen. I think our bullpen is better than theirs, but offensively for sure, they play a style of baseball that has helped them win 108 games, and I don't think that's the traditional American League style baseball.
Jimmy Rollins was definitely part of some great Philadelphia Philly teams, and it's great having him here on 97.3 The Fan. Talk some baseball playoffs. I want to ask you about your World Series win over Tampa Bay, but before that, let's talk a little bit about the Dodgers and the Brewers.
Yep.
Couple of franchises you know a lot about. The Brewers really are going analytics. I mean, with the crazy starting pitching and the openers, the Dodgers a little bit more like it's supposed to be, I guess. Dodgers seem like they've got the advantage, but Milwaukee has won 11 in a row. They're playing awfully well.
Yeah, they remind me of the 2007 Colorado Rockies, where they hit that stretch and they couldn't be beat. And everybody was concerned about them getting that time off. They came to our place, knocked us out in three. They went on to the next round, 1-4. And they had this time off, and everybody was concerned. But they are different. They believe in what they have. They were in a position where no one really expected that of them. Christian Yelich has went there and put together an MVP caliber season. They have some good starting pitching, and I just don't know what you're going to get from them, which scares me. Like, you don't know what you're going to get. The Dodgers, you know what you're getting. You know that this, like I said, it's more of a traditional put together baseball team. They have good starting pitching. Ryu and Buehler, the way they've come at it, especially makes them very dangerous. But Milwaukee has a potent lineup. They move the ball. They get clutch hits. There's always Johnny on the spot. And it's just one of those years you don't know who's going to beat you, but the one person or the two people, I guess, you don't want to beat you are Ryan Braun and Yelich. But then you got the big man at first base that is doing some damage too. Lorenzo Cain has won the World Series. They have a lot of experience over there. So they're not afraid of the moment, I can tell you that much. And they're a franchise that it wouldn't be a bad thing to see them win. We know about their history. You know, second place finish is still getting a parade. We knocked them out in 2008. So
yes, you did.
I like this team.
He remembers.
I like this team, and they scare me because I just don't know what I'm going to get from them, and that's a good thing.
Jimmy, we're going to let you get out of here, but before you go, I got to get your predictions on both sides. If you can give it in the AL, I know you're covering that series. So if you can give us predictions, what do you got National League, what you got American League?
Okay, NL, they're both tough. And I will say, this is tough. I'm going to go with Milwaukee there. I just like the way that they're going about it. I really do. And I think a hot team, especially this time of year, beats a good team. And the Dodgers are very good. But Milwaukee has been so hot, you just can't get off that train.
Yeah.
And the AL, because of starting pitching and bullpen, I'm going to go with Houston. Offensively, I think it's going to be a pretty even match, but pitching, you definitely have to give Houston the edge on that.
Well, there you have it, folks. I think this is the Major League Baseball's worst nightmare.
That's the one that the TV executives don't want. They do not want Houston and Milwaukee, but it may happen that way. Hey, can I just get you real quick? I know, Tony, we got to let him go, but when you guys won your World Series, to me it was the strangest game ever played. Against the Tampa Bay Rays, it got rained out in about the fifth or sixth inning. You guys had to wait for a day or two. come back and play, what, 3-4 innings and win that game to win your World Series. It's one of the strangest championships I've ever seen. Can you just take us through it a little bit? I'm sure you have fond memories of that night, although it was a short evening.
Oh, yeah. We knew the rain was coming, and inside we were saying, you know, they always talk about this window, and Ant knows about it. Well, there's this window. There's this three-hour window, and they'll sit there and show you the radar, and it's a circle, which is like the center of a hurricane, and you see all this green around it, and it's like, that's the window. Okay, what about what happens before and after? No, we'll be fine to get it in. So it's like, okay, well, all right, well, if you say let's go, and then it's time to go. And, you know, just the rain coming down, I mean, the lights glaring off the field, you don't know what is a raindrop, what's a fly ball when a ball goes up. You're getting, all the glare on ground balls. It was just a crazy day and a crazy game. Then they press pause. You know, they Tampa Bay had to go switch hotels, and that was the one time I was like, and you really think you guys have home field advantage? You have to stay here for 2 extra days, deal with this rain, and anytime you step out the hotel, you're dealing with Philly fans, and you already know how that's going to go.
Yeah.
Right. And then I remember Jeff Jenkins leading off, I think it was the 6th inning, maybe in the 6th inning, we paused it in the 5th, the bottom of the 5th, the bottom of the 6th, whatever it was. And I told him, you know, he came up, he was just unclear in his mind. He was like, man, I don't know what to do. Like, do I take a pitch? How do I go about it? And I was putting myself in that situation, even though I wasn't leading off. I'm like, what would I do? I'm like, Jeff, let them think the game has started over. All we did is like Nintendo. You just press pause. And when you press unpause, the action picks back up. Let them think that the game is reset. And I'm like, what is he going to try to do? Yeah, Balfour on the mound. He's throwing first pitch fastball. He's trying to get ahead. Why let him do that? The last thing he is expecting you to do after being on hold for 2 days is ambush. He came out, hit a big double, and prior to that, I was literally in the cage. Had the machine turned up, raised up high, had Ali Modami. I'm like, look, just put the ball in. I bunted, I don't know, 50, 60 balls, and Ant's there. I don't bunt. That's not what I do. Ricky Anderson didn't bunt, so I don't bunt. So I bunted, and I bunted, and I bunted, and I bunted until I felt comfortable. Just something came over me and said, I'm going to be getting a guy over to third base. Like, this is going to be a critical point in the game. I advanced him, Pedro Feliz, with the game-winning hit, and the rest was history. So that was the best part about it all, is that I think we caught them off guard. For them, it was like a game reset. But for us, my mentality was like, no, it was just like pressing pause when you're playing Nintendo. There's no reset button. You know, you just press pause, and when you unpause the game goes.
Right. Excellent.
Great story there. I'll never forget that night. And I'm sure Philly fans never will forget it either. Yeah. Hey, Jimmy Rollins, thanks so much for joining us. Great pleasure to have you on the program out here. And best of luck with your broadcasting the rest of the playoffs. But no pressure, because I know Tony's going to be watching the next game to see what suits you wear.
Oh, that suit, yeah, got to be strong.
Oh, yeah. I'm keeping it clean. Keeping it clean, Matt.
All right.
Just give me a little hint, Tony. I got a little Tom Ford piece coming
okay,
for you.
Okay, Tom Ford's in the building. Okay.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
All right, J-Ro, thanks for joining us, brother.
Thank you. Take care.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Excited to talk to a former Charger wide receiver, played in the National Football League for nearly a decade, and now is kind of looking at it from the outside. Joining us on the Spectrum Business Hotline is former Charger and Buffalo Bills wide receiver Stevie Johnson. Stevie, how are you today?
I'm good. I'm happy to be on with you guys. How's it going for you guys?
We're good. Fantastic. And we're really happy to have you on. I don't know, real quick, I mean, you played in both extremes, right? You played a lot of your career in Buffalo. And how was that compared to playing, even though it was a short time, in San Diego? Kind of different weather patterns, yeah. I think.
the weather is very different. It's always a vacation over here. And in Buffalo, it's got to be a vacation in your mind, because that weather is brutal. But, you get through it, though. You do what you have to do.
Now, Stevie, you were last active 2015, and it seems like in that short span of time, the game has changed tremendously. What are your thoughts on the changes that have been made to the game, and do you think it's helpful?
Honestly, yes. I do like the changes, and I mean, it's a process right now, you know, with the rules and how things are going, but you know, when you're inside it and it's happening, it may seem off and it may seem bad, but you know, at the end, it's gonna count to something better. Like when I was playing, we was getting fined and getting in trouble for celebrating, you know. And now they allow it, you know. But we had to go through that in order to get to where it is now, you know. So with the flags and ejections, like, it's hurting and affecting coaches and players. Yes, we know that, but it'll get to something better. It'll make our game stronger and better for the athlete.
Stevie Johnson joining us here now on the Spectrum Business Hotline here on 97.3 The Fan. Stevie, I'm glad you brought up the celebrations, because one of my favorite parts about watching you play was that you always had an A1 celebration.
And he got there a lot.
Do you find yourself, now that you're not playing, looking at these celebrations, coming up with things that you would have done had you been able to get in the end zone now?
Yes, because I was a wild boy, so I don't know what I would have thought of, and I'm probably happy that there was a limit on what we had to do, because I don't know what I would have done in those days. But it's good to see. It's really good to see, though. You know, the guys out there competing. You know, because at the end of the day, we don't go out there, and this is what I do when I go to schools and teach kids. You know, at the end of the day, you want to have fun, but you make sure you got to handle business first. And those guys that are celebrating out there with their teammates, I love the team celebrations the most. But those guys that are celebrating out there, they put in work, you know. So that's how I see it. They shouldn't be getting flagged and fined for putting in work and having fun afterwards.
I like that point that you made, because I've heard it from many players, and they talk about, you know, you may not like, you know, celebrating, and you might think it's, you know, individualistic. It's
not
really not.
Year.
The thing is, it's hard to get in the end zone.
Yeah.
They don't just
it's
let
tough.
You walk it's, in there, you know,
exactly.
So when you get there, you have a right to be kind of happy about it.
Yeah, and it could possibly be your last time in the end zone. So take advantage. One of my regrets is not giving the ball to my linemen enough, because they, you know, they rarely get to score. I wish I could have gave the ball to the linemen so they could do some have some fun with it.
I heard that. Stevie, the Steelers this year, they've been an interesting story, I think. They've caught a lot of former football guys off guard by the way some of the players spoke out about Le'Veon Bell. They've seemed like they've been in the news more this season than possibly any other season. What's your take on what you've seen from the Steelers and how they've handled Le'Veon, how his teammates have handled Le'Veon Bell?
It's tricky, because you know you can look at it from a player or from just a fan watching, and it's easy to love the Pittsburgh Steelers when everything's rolling and they're winning and it's showtime, and it looks like everything's sweet. But at the end of the day, we got to remember it's still a business. Yeah. And then when it comes down to that business side, it gets ugly, and that's what we're seeing right now. And that's one thing that I don't like about the sports out here is everything's so publicized and out there in the media, you know, and it's looking like the Pittsburgh Steelers are against Le'Veon and all those inside things that the players know and that we know inside the locker room, but shouldn't be really exposed.
Right.
As far as the team go. And it's looking ugly for the Pittsburgh Steelers, but you know how it goes. If you win, nobody really remembers all the things that's been said in the bad ways.
That's why I hope they keep losing, so that we get to keep hearing all this fun stuff. Stevie Johnson is with...
It's a cycle, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Stevie Johnson played with the Chargers 2015, 10 starts that year, 45 receptions. I remember you coming to San Diego. I know that you had some injuries and some things that probably didn't allow you to get done what you wanted to get done. What do you remember about your time in San Diego?
Overall, just having that moment to play, you know, in this place, you know, this beautiful place. I can remember when I was in Buffalo, and when it was my contract time there, the first place I thought was coming to San Diego. And, you know, you guys had someone here already that was young and developing. So, you know, I ended up staying in Buffalo. But, you know, to be able to play here and play with Rivers, play with Malcolm Floyd and Keenan Allen, Antonio Gates, Melvin Ingram, all those guys, it was great. You know, with Malcolm Floyd, it was special because, out of high school, I was going to go to Wyoming, and he was there. He was the star player at Wyoming. So, you know, it's kind of cool how later on we end up playing in the same receiving room. So that was pretty cool to me.
Stevie Jackson joins us here. I'm sorry, Stevie Jackson. Stevie Johnson joins us here on the Spectrum Business Hotline on 97.3 The Fan. Stevie, one last question really before we let you get out of here. You talked about playing in San Diego and some of your memories. How well do you remember the San Diego fan base?
I mean, the San Diego fan base, I feel like they're loyal to a point where we hear it every week. There's more opposing teams. There's more visiting teams here. It's like, okay, we hear that. We know it's a beautiful place. It should be like that. They should come visit and come be entertained. And to put up with that and continuously, you know, stay strong, not necessarily forcing the hand and doing the most as far as, we're supporters of San Diego Chargers, et cetera, et cetera. You know, they just stay true to their team. And that's the beautiful part of it, you know, through all the talk. And negativity that they talk about it. You know, it's similar with Buffalo.
Yeah, Buffalo, they love their team there. I just want to real quick, exactly. we've been talking about leadership in sports the last half hour, and you played with Phillip Rivers. I always felt that just from afar, this is a guy that made you want to play. Not that you didn't need the motivation, but if there was ever any motivation lacking, he would make sure that you snapped right back to attention. That's what I always admired about Phillip Rivers. Am I right about that?
Yeah, you're right on with that, because he gets you going in a way where you're not thinking about it as business anymore. It's back to competition, you know, competitive football with your homies. You know, that's the beauty of it when you in the huddle with Phil. He gets you going in that type of way to where you're just having fun and trying to ball with your boys.
Fun talking to you, Stevie. Good luck. Hopefully we can catch up with you again. Maybe around playoff time we'll get some insight. It'll be fun.
Absolutely. It should be interesting by that time, huh?
Yeah. Thank you, Stevie.
Thanks for joining us.
Take care,
enjoyed
guys.
It. Stevie Johnson right there.
It's now time for the most electrifying segment in sports radio. Gwen and Chris go through the best of the rest in the Big Five.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. I can't click on the thing.
What thing? What are we talking about?
I'm bringing it up on my phone now because I apparently am like Ron Burgundy and I can't do anything without reading it. Okay, here we go.
See how his confidence went back up now?
Number five.
Joe Flacco, man, already out the
Flacco.
Game.
Flacco?
Man, with the, what was it with Thomas the other day? It was Twain?
It's Twain.
Twain.
Flacco's Twain.
Oh, wait, my computer's back. Okay, good. Whew. Joe Flacco's wife wants him to try harder at wide receiver. Last week, Lamar Jackson came into the game to be a quarterback, and Joe Flacco went out to wide receiver and did his best Jay Cutler because he just stood there and did nothing. And Flacco said that his wife wanted him to try a little bit harder when he played the position. He said he disagreed with her, but it got me thinking. We're going to start with you, Tony. What is a critique your wife has given you that you didn't think you deserved?
I think every single one. My wife is a stickler for turning off lights when you're not in a room. And I
appreciate that.
I am critiqued all the time, even before I even walk out the room. Don't forget to turn off your light. And it just drives me insane.
Can we share what happened before the show today?
Absolutely.
Okay, so we're waiting for an interview, and I'm getting a little nervous. It's 1:29, and I called Tony. He did not answer, and then he comes in the studio at 1:30, right after he, you know, did the button on me, and he goes, "Don't be like my wife."
Like you are not allowed to give a check-in call like my wife.
She's allowed to
She's
do that.
She's allowed to do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah,
you, on the other hand, are not.
That was funny, I thought. All right, Chris, what is a critique your wife has given you that you didn't deserve?
Didn't I go already?
No, sir, you have not.
I'll tell you what. I'll do one that she gives me for the talk show.
Okay.
Okay.
Go ahead and say something, Scrappy.
Oh,
no, let me go ahead and just talk right over you.
She says that about
she
you.
She doesn't like the fact that I talk over people on the talk show.
It happens. It's a does. Long
it
show.
Happens quite she a probably bit. Is very upset with me because I find myself cutting you off a couple times.
No, she's not upset with you.
She's just upset with
you. Just me. She thinks you're terrific. She thinks Scraby's terrific.
You're just okay.
I talk over people all the time.
Should we get out of this weird place that we're in?
I think yes. We should. Hurry, hurry, hurry.
Number four.
A man named David Brown caught the fish of his lifetime, but not before it towed their boat 7 miles during a marathon battle last Wednesday off Nantucket, Massachusetts. The fish was an 800-pound, 9-foot-long tuna that took 6 hours to reel in. So, Chris, what is the biggest fish you've ever caught?
This is an easy one for me.
Okay.
I've never caught a fish.
What? Whoa. We need to go on a fishing trip then.
Kill the big five.
Right. We need to go on.
We have to leave now?
We need to figure out.
We need to talk about this because we need to go on a fishing trip.
I've been on fishing trips. I've been on fishing boats. I've been on half-day boats, full-day boats, three-quarter-day boats. I've been here, there, everywhere.
And you've never caught a fish.
Do you know how much patience I have?
That's true. I can. Okay.
So what do? I throw the reel in.
You reel it right
back
in.
And I reel it right back up. And if there's no fish on the end, I throw it in again and reel it right back up.
Okay, that makes more sense.
So that's why I've never caught a fish. So there's your answer.
Tony?
I caught a 100-pound sailfish before, and that was a lot of fun. It wasn't 6 hours. It was 30 minutes. It felt like 2 hours, though.
Yeah. I caught a 130-pound halibut in Alaska, and it did take me 2 hours to reel in.
I bet.
And it ripped up my hands, and it's not fun reeling in a big fish.
It's not. You actually need teammates.
You do.
There's no shot that you're going to do it
by yourself.
I called
my uncle. I was like, tag team in, bro, because I can't do this anymore. My hands were bleeding.
Did you have the little seat to have you
I didn't.
So you were actually standing and trying to do this?
Yes.
Oh,
the pole was in one of those things on the
holsters.
Holsters, yeah. But I had to like grab the line, and as soon as I did that, it sliced through my hand. It was bad news.
Yeah, I don't know if it was worth that. That wouldn't have been. You have no gloves?
No, I was not prepared
for
this.
Prepared. Okay.
After that story, very happy to report I've never caught a fish before.
You've never caught one fish in your life.
I mean, after he explained the patience part, it makes a lot of sense. I could totally see Chris throwing his line out there and literally, as soon as it hit the water, reeling it back
in.
Yeah.
Wow. And the guy tells me, leave it in there for a minute. I'm like, nah.
Nah.
Former Chargers and now Colts offensive lineman Matt Slauson is a really tough guy. He's been known for playing through lots of injuries, and this year is no different. The Colts placed him on IR a couple days ago, and no one really knew what the exact reason was. We come to find out that Matt Slauson played the entire second half of last Thursday night's game against the Patriots with 2 broken vertebrae. So, Tony, what is the worst injury you have ever played through? And I'm going to ask Chris the same question, because, Chris, you did play high-level baseball.
Play through?
Yes.
Nothing like this. Worst thing I ever played through probably was my sports hernia.
Oh, that hurts.
Played a season.
Nothing like this, but a sports hernia?
I mean,
that's way worse.
We're talking about vertebrae, though. I played with a sports hernia for a year and a half before I actually had the surgery on it. It was tough. It was painful, but you know, I think when you enjoy doing something, as much as I enjoyed playing baseball, you find ways.
You
don't
want
to
give up your spot either. I can understand that.
That too.
Yeah.
Chris?
I think every Wednesday night that I suit up for my adult softball league, I set a new record for most painful injury that I'm playing for. So tonight I will set a new record, and I'll let you know about it tomorrow. When you're my age, you're always hurt. And that's really all I got. Because I was pretty injury-free during my college days.
Really?
Yeah, I just was lucky that way.
Because you asked the question of played through, that was really the only injury that I actually played through. I've had some more serious injuries, but I couldn't play through those.
Well, what was one of the more serious ones?
Well, my very last game of my career, I snapped my arm throwing the baseball back in.
What?
Yeah. Apparently, I don't remember when I might have hurt it prior to that, but my arm had been hurting for like a week, and like Chris said, it was almost September. I was swinging a really hot bat, and I did not want to come out of line, so I was just taping it up every day. And sure enough, a ball hit the outfield. I came up, there was a runner on first, came in, threw it hard to third to keep him from going first to third, and my arm snapped.
Broke your arm.
So I had to have a plate and some screws that are still in my arm to this day.
No, because I've never been in a locker room or clubhouse. As a player, when you go in, do they, and you say my arm hurts a little bit, do they go all hands on deck, or are they kind of like, all right, you're fine?
Well, I was in the middle of a game, and the fact that I asked out of the game, they knew it was
something
probably
was
something pretty serious. Unfortunately for me, we were in Rochester, New York, and it was a Saturday, so there was no doctors available. I had to just tough it out for 2 days and got to Monday. And originally they said there was nothing wrong. And then he called back and it's like, we looked at the wrong x-ray.
Oh, what?
Your arm is actually broken.
That's like a malpractice lawsuit.
They caught it, though. So it actually ended
before
up
being, you could sue them, they caught it?
Before I knew that there was something actually real seriously wrong.
Who was your manager at the time?
Oh, man.
I was just looking for a name. They're like, hey, he's fine. Put him back in there. Yeah, Coach, I can't go back in.
I got his x-ray right here.
I wasn't going back in.
Nothing wrong
that game.
With him.
I couldn't feel my arm, so I couldn't go back in.
Number two.
The Cleveland Indians are out of the playoffs after being swept by the Astros in the ALDS, and Houstonian and MLB Network host Robert Flores was very happy about it. He retweeted a video by Space City Sports, and it was started off with Indians' Mike Clevinger saying this about the Astros.
We're right there with them. There's not anything they have that we don't have. They're not that special, so...
He said that in April, that the Astros are not that special. So he was not very happy with Roflo and tweeted back to him saying, quote, you're an idiot, complete, utter, unknowledgeable. I hope you go around praising the hell out of who you compete with and you work for at MLB and you still want to try to drag me. You're soft as pudding and have no real takes. Roflo replied with, quote, I just shared it. I didn't create it. So Clevinger tweeted back, quote, you're a teenage girl. I just shared it. You know, I'm thinking that's what he meant by
I think that's
it.
Exactly
I just shared it. You're a cockroach, end quote. So, Chris, what is the weaseliest thing a media member has ever done in your eyes? He just...
I probably did it.
No, you didn't. Stop.
Ever?
Oh, what comes to mind? What comes to
mind? Here's what comes to mind. I was at a Laker-Portland Trailblazer game covering the game for the newspaper, and we used to sit on the baseline right on the floor. Unbelievable seat, obviously, to watch an NBA game.
I
know, this is a jealous one. The guy next to me working for the Portland Oregonian, so he's covering the game for the Blazers.
Yeah.
And I believe it was Portland came down on a fast break, or the Lakers came down on a fast break. Anyway, Byron Scott jumped up to try and block the shot, whatever, wound up over the baseline, over the table, in the guy's lap. The play continued because the ball stayed in play and went the other way. Byron Scott was trying to get up. This guy was holding Byron Scott. He's a sports writer. He was holding Byron Scott, not letting him get back in the play. Fortunately, honestly, one of the officials saw it, blew the whistle, came right over. They extracted Byron Scott from the guy's grasp, and the sports writer, you tossed out of the building.
Wow. And he probably lost his credentials.
Well, I don't know about all whatever happened after that, but I know that the officials do have that much power in an arena.
Yes, they do.
And they kicked this guy out of the arena. He's sitting right next to me. I mean, and he frankly deserved to be kicked out of the arena.
No
doubt. So that's as weaselly as I can think
of. Good story. Tony, what's the weaseliest thing a media member has done? Because you've been in front of a lot of media.
I have. I haven't been on this side very often, so a lot of that stuff gets... shielded from the players, I think, for the most part, until it happens to them.
Yeah,
I can't think of one off the top of my head, or at least names that were involved. But I do remember, I can't remember where I was. Maybe it was Milwaukee. One of the reporters had a recorder on and didn't give that courtesy.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm recording, and it wasn't like it was out in front where you could see.
Hidden.
It was just kind of put on the. He wasn't like hiding it, but it wasn't as visible as it could have been.
That's Weasley.
That's very Weasley.
That is
number one.
The receivers left and right. Barb out of the shotgun. Chester to his right. Third down, 12 seconds to go in the game. Niners lead by 4. Favre back to pass, pumps to the left, 8 seconds left. He gets away from the pressure, fires to the end zone. It's caught! It's Greg Lewis! Touchdown! Oh, my goodness! Greg Lewis! Welcome to the
Dude,
Bears!
Do you guys remember that when Brett Favre just threw the ball up in the air against the 49ers? Sean Hill was the starting quarterback in the Niners, and he caught. He won. It was just one of the biggest, craziest plays you'll ever see. You don't remember that?
A Hail Mary pass to win a football game. Yeah, well, you never see that.
Well, the reason that I'm bringing that up is because it's Brett Favre's birthday. He turns 49 today. Okay. The guy who ruined Tony in my childhood because he kept beating my 49ers, and I don't know why he ruined Tony's childhood.
Every team that I would be rooting for, he was always playing against, and he was always seemed to win.
So he's only 49?
49.
Dang.
So my question is, Tony, what's your best Brett Favre moment?
Best Brett Favre moment.
I'll give you a couple to jog your memory. Like when he performed on Monday Night Football after his father passed away.
I actually thought the year that he played for the Vikings was one of his better moments because... it was right after he had been basically just kicked out of Green Bay, and he went back and proved to everybody that he still had. He put up one of his better years with the Minnesota Vikings and came up really just short in the NFC Championship game.
Chris?
My favorite Brett Favre moment was the year before Tony's talking about, and he wasn't kicked out of Green Bay. He was kicked out of New York because he was awful with the Jets.
Touche.
And he also sent some unsavory pictures.
In the final game of the season that year, Miami, always comes back to them.
It does.
Had to beat the Jets to win the division. And it's the last time anybody other than the Patriots won that division. And thankfully, Brett Favre threw the Dolphins like 4 interceptions, and Miami won. So that's my favorite Brett Favre moment.
The Jets came before Minnesota?
Yeah. Green Bay, Jets, Minnesota. Correct? Well, maybe we better double-check that.
Big Five from Green and Chris on 97.3, The Fan.
Yeah, I think the Jets, he snuck in there, and that's what...
I am here.
Guys. Oh, that's gorgeous.
Very nice.
That's gorgeous. That's like the Velvet Fog right there. Mel Torme. The Voice. Beautiful.
Well, if you could just give us that lovely
whatever you were
answer
saying.
You were saying before.
Whatever I was saying before. Guys, I can only recognize it as a player. Rod Carew lost his job because we weren't good. In Milwaukee, and I felt bad because if Rod Carew can't teach you how to hit and can't be another set of eyes, that's a tough thing to do. So I hate it. It's perceived from the fans as it's a scapegoat. It's one of those things. These guys have to show growth, and I think it's on the individual player, in my opinion.
In a lot of ways, Mark, I mean, we looked at it, you know, and hearing about Matt Stairs, and let's just come clean. We're friends. Matt Stairs is a friend of the show. So is Josh Johnson. I think personally, I was sorry to see both of those guys go. So let's just get that out there. But
Very
it seemed
true.
Like there were a lot of guys that were improving the second half of the season. I mean, Renfro and Hedges and Franmil Reyes. It did seem like there were some guys that were coming along and showing the kind of improvement that you're talking about. So that's kind of why we were wondering, you know, why would the Padres make this move? And it's not fair to ask you because you certainly weren't. Nobody got your opinion.
Right.
I mean, they didn't.
Yeah, I think, Chris, a lot of people don't realize that, we're detached from all that. We get information from Matt Stairs and Johnny Washington, and those guys are very good with us. But you know, they have a job to do. And you know, it's most of the questions are, hey, what's this guy have? What's he like to go to? Those type of conversations. We don't get in depth with, you know, what are you working on with Manny Margot, for example. That's not really our place. We really do a lot of it with an eye test and what we feel as hitters ourselves when Tony's involved and we discuss certain things. So to me, I did see that. I saw improvement on certain guys. Manuel Margot, to me, took a step back. But he also made some improvements mid-season that I thought were very important. And he has something to go on in the off-season. It's, to me, I think they're just trying to find that right formula. And sometimes that's very difficult to find.
Swain, as we look at this 2018 roster and we start looking into next year, I think last time we had you on, we asked you a similar question, and you said starting pitcher. Is there a particular free agent or pitcher that you might see that would fit this roster well?
That's a tough question. I think it's going to be through the trade route, and I think there's probably already conversations that they had at the trading deadline that they'll probably go towards. Tony, with that being said, making a trade is not very easy. It's something that takes some groundwork at times. Sometimes it comes across and comes together very easily. I know that because being in the Dodger organization, I was privy to those conversations about trades. So it's not always easy, and there's always a stumbling block that makes it very difficult to consummate. So I would say they'd go through the trade route before they would do free agency. And that being said, we heard a lot about the Mets pitchers. I would think those guys would probably be involved, and hopefully they are.
Jacob DeGrom straight up for... Pretty much.
Yeah,
you can name a lot of guys. Mark Sweeney's with us. Mark, real quick on the game last night, if you happen to see it. I mean, that's fantastic what baseball should be, bottom of the ninth inning, wasn't it? I mean, whether you were rooting for the Red Sox or the Yankees or didn't rooting for either team, it was just the joy to see that kind of drama unfold. I loved it.
Yeah, Chris, the intensity part of it is something that, you know, when people say, what do you miss about baseball? I'm sure Tony and I can agree with this. That's what you miss.
No
you
doubt.
Miss that opportunity to be in an intense moment. You got Craig Kimbrell that's got great stuff but did not have command in the ninth inning. And you saw the Yankees there was their last chances. The Sanchez at bat was intense. The sad thing to me is the replay at the end of the game.
Right.
I don't know how everyone sits on replay, but, man, I had a tough time waiting to see if he was safe or not, and we already knew the answer before these umpires are even coming out and telling us. So, to me, that's the frustrating part. I'm a human element guy. I know they make mistakes, but I think replay is killing the game, in my opinion.
100%. That's the first thing I thought of. As soon as the play was over and the umpire called him out, I'm like, we can't even really
it's
get
not
it.
Over
we
yet.
We can't even get into this because they're about to go to replay, and we're going to have to wait at least 2.5 minutes to figure out if this is real and can the celebration continue.
And it could have been really comical if they would have ruled him safe and the Yankee fans would have been celebrating and then they overturned it. Because I don't even want to know what would have happened. So I agree with
you. That would have been ugly. Guys, on that boat, too, you know, when you think about replay, for the regular season, there's not the intensity that ninth inning had. And that's when you start realizing that those rules and how much replay we go through is very difficult to handle. It takes the emotion out of the game. And good or bad or different, if an umpire makes a bad call, the rest of the game is different. And you saw it with Angel Hernandez the night before. It was one of those things that, even if they make mistakes, it adds interest to the game and why people are angry or why people are happy. That's the reason why I think replay is crushing the game of baseball.
All right, if they don't give you the job as the new hitting coach, then you can be the commissioner. Love what you're saying.
I know for a fact they're not giving me the job.
Okay.
Sweet, let me ask you, because you saw a lot of the Dodgers this year. We seen Milwaukee. How these are basically two teams, at least from the pitching side of it, are handling it completely opposite. How do you see this series kind of working out?
You know, the interesting thing that's going to happen is that this bullpenning or openers or whatever you want to call it is really it's going to be interesting, because I think Milwaukee has an advantage when it comes to that. And I'll tell you why. The Dodgers play a lot of matchups. And I think Josh Hader, I've always said it's going to be that X factor of if you have a right-hander starting and you got a left-handed dominant lineup, Josh Hader is going to come in, and it's going to be tough for the Dodgers to score. So it's imperative for the Milwaukee Brewers to score early in this series. And if they do, I think it's going to go six or seven games. It's going to be tough for the Dodgers to capitalize on a tough Milwaukee Brewers team.
Well, let me ask you a follow-up question, since you said that you feel like Milwaukee has the advantage. If you're the Dodgers, Do you are you making lineups with Hader in mind? Do you have a righty lefty mismatch flow so that you kind of at least soften the blow of a guy like Hader coming in?
Yeah, I think you're going to have to. You're going to have to go that right left, like you said, Tony. In my opinion, because you're not going to be able to stack two lefties together and then have that opportunity where Hader can just abuse these guys. He's that good, as you know. But I really think it comes down to Dave Roberts trusting his left-handed hitters and also being able to score early. They're very versatile, but their versatility was really in the regular season at the end of the games for the Dodgers. That's the intensity of this series. But it really is. It's imperative for this offense of the Milwaukee Brewers to be able to score early. And they're going to have to beat Clayton Kershaw. Yeah. And I think that's going to be something that is going to be imperative. If they beat Clayton Kershaw, it is a totally different series because you have to take down their ace. And I don't think the Milwaukee Brewers have a natural ace. They're going to have guys that just step up and throw five innings.
Now, they have no ace. They have no starting pitcher named yet for the game. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, this is baseball 2018. We're a day before the first playoff, and there's no starter even named. Crazy.
Yeah, I think they have the ability to do that because it's you know, obviously he's going to have a conversation tomorrow when the press conferences happen. So they're going to have to name somebody. I don't think three or four guys are going to have to answer questions, so that's going to be a little strange. So I would say Chacin, an ex-Padre, is going to probably get that start. I wouldn't be surprised if he did.
It's always an ex-Padre. Just like there was Kimbrel in the middle of the game last night. There's always an ex-Padre. Sweeney, thank you so much. Great talking to you, Mark, and we'll catch up
guys,
with you soon.
I appreciate it.
Thanks, Sweeney.
Thank you very much.
All right, Mark Sweeney right there.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.